Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we will have fascinating topic, making Shul a more joyous and meaningful experience. You know, we all have children, we all have with ourselves. Oh my goodness, time to go to Shul again. Some people have that attitude, and some days we have that attitude. Well, we're going to speak to a number of Rabbanim who've done a wonderful job of making Shul a more joyous experience. We have Rabbi Moshe Weinberger of Eish Kodesh in the Five Towns, who gets hundreds and hundreds of mispalim. He said when they do their when they bring in one of their for their kumzitzes, he says they have thousands of people coming. We have Rabbi Aaron Lankry. He is of Laser Shiner's Shul in here in Muncie. And with the assistance of Leza, he's created really Erech Chaim, one of the great shuls here in Muncie. They get also hundreds, if not thousands, of people on occasions. We will have, from Lakewood, we will have a very interesting Rav of Barditchev, a new shul in Lakewood. We'll hear his story as well. You can listen to us, Matzah Shabbos, 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA 570 AM and always on the Nachum Segal Network. Also, it's repeated Nachum Segal. Monday morning, 11 a.m. at NachumSiegel.com. You can find all our shows at headlinesbook.com under the podcast section or on iTunes. We can always call in 732-806-8700. You can email us questions or comments to info, at headlinesbook.com. Before we go to our fabulous guests, I would like to just say a small thought on the Parsha. You know, this week we spoke about Chayasara. And what does it say about Chayasara? Vayu Chayasara was Kuf Kav Zayin, 127 years. So the great Chiddush Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, writes in the Likutei Harim, he says, the Medrash brings, a famous Medrash here, it says, Rabbi Akiva was sitting, and he was teaching his students, and he saw that they were a little sleepy, happens to all of us, and he wanted to rouse them, so he tells them, why was Esther Zaycha to have to rule over 127 Medinas, 127 nations? He says, the daughter, the granddaughter of Sarah, who was good for 127 years, she was angelic, she was wonderful. In her schus, Esther ruled over 127 Medinas. He said, how did this rouse the students? Like you found 127, 127. He says, think of it. She was 127 Medinas, she says, Esther ruled over. Because of the 127 years that Esther was, that Sarah was that, you know, pristine, amazing, wonderful. So he said, think, for each year that Sarah was wonderful, she got a nation. That means for each month, she got a region. For each day, she got a number of cities, like in the United States, or something like 19,000 cities, right? So, a nation, a year, a month, an entire state, well, I guess a number of states, because there are 50s, and in a day, city. She says, what does that mean every hour? Think of it. There are 19,000 cities in the United States. There are 84,000 seconds in a day, which means there are certainly much less than 19,000 cities. That means each minute of your day is another city. Each second is another neighborhood, right? Imagine what you can do in the 84. Every morning we get up and we're given 84 some odd thousand seconds in our bank account for that day. Imagine how much you could accomplish during that time, which is why if you use time well. It says Avram Zakein Baba Yamim and Chsidim Taij Baba Yamim at Mitgebrach Diteg, he brought them along with him. When we use our time well and we're aware of how much we can accomplish in a day, we bring our days along with us. They're full, they're loaded, they're packed. Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, who wrote the Morals, the Pirush on the Morals, that fantastic Pirush, sent me a clip of a Shliach who came to the Lubavitch Rebbe with the largest donor of his town. I think it was someplace in Australia. So he tells the Rebbe in this very modern-looking, barely, I'm not sure if he was religious-looking donor, standing there, you know, in a brim-down hat on all sides, a very cool-looking fellow, and he says, this person has done so much for our city here in Australia. And the Lubavitch Rebbe looks at him and he says, whatever you did, you can do double. As much as you've done, you have it within you to do twice as much. And I think it's a lesson for all of us. Imagine a medina for every year, right? A city for every day, every minute, who knows? Villages and villages. How much we can accomplish and how much we have to accomplish. Kol Yisrael needs every one of us. And you know, another thought. This week, Avram sends his very devoted, his lifelong servant, Eliezer, on a mission. And he says, he makes him promise, Simna yadcha tachas yirechi. Now, you have to believe he trusted Eliezer. Eliezer is next to him. It says, stands guard over him in the Maras HaMachpela. He went to war with him. And yet he makes him promise. Vashbiacha, Balekei Avi. Why did he make him promise? Did he not trust him? You could say that. But here's another possibility. You know, when we set a goal, we get empowered by our commitment. In a Chacham Echad, Medina Sa'ilam once said, he said, strategy without tactics is a slow road to victory. Set a goal, even if you don't know how you're going to get there, but a real goal, you'll get there, slowly maybe. Whereas tactics, staying busy without a strategy, without a goal, is the noise before defeat. You know what Ashbiacha says? He said, promise me, make that commitment. If you make the commitment, you're going to get there. So when it comes to using our time wisely, it's not enough to stay busy. Make a promise. Say, this year, I will accomplish X. This month, I will accomplish X. This week, I will accomplish X. Then write it up, journal it. And you know what? Strategy without tactics, shvua, even if you don't know exactly how, you're going to get there. Let's go to our phone lines. We have two fantastic guests who are going to tell all of us lay people, as well as the Rabbanim listening, and we do have many Rabbanim who listen, I get emails from them, how to create a more meaningful, more joyous, more happy shul experience. We have with us on the line Harav Moshe Weinberger. He is the Rav of Eish Kodesh in Woodmere, New York. He's also the Mashkiach Ruchni at Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. Welcome, Rabbi Weinberger.
Thank you.
So, from what I understand, that your shul is one of the most packed, exciting, full shuls in all of the five towns. Well, maybe one of the most interesting in all of New York. And many of the mispalim who go there say that they never had a connection to tefillah, and they never had a connection to a shul before they daven by you. In fact, people move into the neighborhood just to be able to daven by you. Could you give us share some of the ethos, how did you manage to do this?
Well, first of all, to say that I managed to do it, it would be taking too much credit. I believe from the beginning, I believe that with all of the education and all the exposure to sophisticated ways of learning and so on, that there's a thirst for Kadosh Baruch Hu that to a large extent has not been addressed in modern Orthodox. When I say modern Orthodox, I mean across the spectrum of Orthodoxy. I mean in modern times, from the most Hasidish to the most modern of our brothers and sisters, that this thirst for a connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu to a large extent has not been addressed. And the formula, therefore, from the beginning was very, very straightforward. We're going to learn Mitzvah Hashem in a good way, in a strong way. Shas and Shulchan Aruch, Baruch Hashem, Al Kehillah makes the Siyum HaShas every year. And we've gone through a tremendous amount of nigla, but at the same time, we would try to become acquainted with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We would try to have a relationship with Hashem Yisbarach. And davening, I heard once from a tzaddik, from Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter, that the word daven that we're constantly using comes from the word da'avuhun, from our fathers. And Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechter said that the problem is that we are relying upon the davening of our fathers instead of davening ourselves. And I believe that the Jews want to have this relationship, and we've tried to energize Jews from all different backgrounds by creating a Beis HaMedrash, where first of all the dignity of Tefillah is going to be kept, and talking is something that is unacceptable. Not that I have to shushke and quiet people and send gabayim and monitors and to warn, but rather because of the excitement of Tefillah, what we're trying to create, talking would become something that simply is absurd and silly.
Now, by the way, a raya for Rabbi Shechter is you say the avuhain is, what do we say? Tfilos avos tiknam. And
correct.
The Rambam brings it in Hilchos Tfilos, so we have a...
Right, so the tfilos that come from the others, we have to connect to these tfilos ourselves, not just to remember that the others tiknam, but how are we misakin our tfilos? And it's important for us to have that connection.
So what do you do different than every shul? I mean, I've been to many shuls where they makbid on speaking during davening. I mean, the Mechab in Tavkuf Chavdalat, I think it's tough, yes, if Zion talks about the importance of, you know, he says, Goyerim by somebody who talks. I've been to many shuls where they scream at people who talk during davening. What do you do different?
I have to ask Chevra from the shul to please not to scream at guests who come and talk. It's the other way around. I have found that when Jews are excited about davening and when they're involved in the tefillah, I have found that it's not a matter of trying to maintain decorum. The tefillah itself occupies the people. And it's said that should be something that's a chiddush, that's something which is unusual. But the Messias is that it's not so common. By yeshivas, where the chevra at that point in life, at that stage in life, they're involved not only in learning, but they feel a sense of camaraderie and common purpose. So that certainly makes davening and yeshiva very different. But to try to bring together balabatim, all different backgrounds, professionals, people who are learning, kipot shvagot, shtraimalach, svardim, ashkenazim, geirim, and so on, I think that what everybody shares in common is that we all have a chelik elokam imal. We all have elokus inside of us. And that part of us is longing for expression. It's difficult. I believe that Ramchal writes in Mishil Shasham Perak Yutes that Hu hayoyis ha-kosher shi-yistayar b'leiv ha-odam, tzir ha-amiti, yan ein achush oizel ha-zeklal. It's very, very hard to connect to that elokus within us because we don't sense it, we don't see it, we don't feel it. So therefore, what the Svar Makadoshim are teaching us and what we've been learning all of the years, it's almost 25 years that we have the shul, is that when it comes to being able, for instance, in Gashmis, we're able to sense things with the Chushei Haguf, with our physical senses. So how does one sense? How does one connect to Elokus? The only way one can connect to Elokus, to that part of us, this neshamish nesata b'tahirhi, to the chelik al kamimal, is by trying to access that deeper part of ourselves. Therefore, the shul is a place where we have been learning besides the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and the regular limudim. We have been learning pnimiyas haTorah from the first day. We've been learning the Svar Makadoshim in a very, very deep way on a regular basis, and that's one way, an important way, of trying to connect to that chush of the neshama. And once a person is in that place of elokai neshama shesati b'tahirihi, so then speaking to Hashem doesn't feel strange. Many people come to shuls, and even people are generally not particularly animated or talkative, but I've noticed over the years, from the time that I was a child, that people are quiet outside somehow when they come to shul, they find what to say, meaning speaking to each other and then trying to come as late as possible to shul and to leave as early as possible from shul, and in the middle to have Chas v'Shalom, a kiddush club or something like that. And it's very, very clear that people are uncomfortable in shul. They know it's a place where they're supposed to be speaking to the Bari Olam, but they don't have a relationship with the Bari Olam. So what are you supposed to do in this place? So it's just an uncomfortable situation, and talking to your friend has replaced talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So what you're doing, one of the things you're doing differently is you learn Svarim HaKadoshim with the Olam.
Correct.
And which Svarim do you learn?
So first of all, the shul is named Eish Kodesh after the Hilige Pius Etzner. So from the beginning, we went through all of his Svarim. We've gone through Chavis HaTalmidim. When I say gone through, I mean B'iyun, over the course of years. Chavis HaTalmidim, Sar Viziris, B'nei Machshava Toiva, Der HaMelech, Haksharas Avreichim. All of the Svarim of the Pius Etzner address this issue of how do we, in this time of Hestaponim, how do we create a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? We also learned the Oimik Ubi'iyun over the years, the Svarim of a contemporary Talmud Chacham, Rav Yisoma Schwartz, the Svarim of Avi Mishkan Evne, which also speak of and teach how to strengthen our Emunah on the most basic level. Together with Sifrei Chabad and Sifrei Breslov and the Kedushas Levi and so on, all of the Svarim HaKadoshim across the spectrum, Nefesh HaChaim as well. But it's not just something where there's an occasional shiur. It's been ongoing, consistent, day by day, limud together with chaburas that learn them, that learn amongst each other, different chevras, chaburas in the shul that want to focus on different aspects of Avodas Hashem. We've also had the schus to have in our shul many times tzaddikim who speak the language of Emunah, contemporary tzaddikim, such as Rav Schwartz and Rav Motel Zilber from Borough Park, and Rav Kluger from Eretz Yisrael, and other tzaddikim who are able to communicate in the language of Emunah to modern people.
So it's particularly the language of Emunah.
Correct.
And why do you think it's the language of Emunah that, I mean, the Svarim HaKadoshim talk about many different aspects of Chassidus. Why is it the language of Emunah that you think is so important to speak about?
The Svarim have revealed to us that at the end of time, the two biggest misgivings are going to be the union of Yosef HaTzadik, Shmir HaKadosha, Shmir Sainayim, V'Habris, V'Chulu, and that's the union of Yosef HaTzadik and Mashiach ben Yosef, and Emunah, which is Mashiach ben David, Tefillah. Tefillah is an outgrowth of Emunah. Obviously, in order to converse, in order to communicate with someone, you have to feel his presence. Many people, when they come to shul, they just feel that they're talking to the wall. They don't know anything. They've never introduced HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they have no shaykhus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then to be asked, to be expected from the time that you're a child to communicate with someone that you've never met and to have and to speak day in, day out, Shachris Mincha Maravdus and then Yom Tov and Shabbos and so on, with someone that you have no shaychus or no kesher to, so it becomes frustrating, and that's why at the end of time, this Nisoyin of Emunah, which is the resource that nurtures tefillah. The more a person is in a place of Emunah and that chush of the neshama strengthened within him, the more of a kesher he has and the greater his desire to enrich his relationship with the one who he loves. It's the same thing with a husband and wife. If you don't know the person, you have no shaykhs to the person, then the communication is, the lines of communication are not going to be healthy.
It's interesting you talk about Emunah. This week's parsha, you have the Haftarah of the Isha Namis.
Right.
So it says that the child was Chavakuk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Chavakuk, why is he called Chavakuk? Because he Chavekes Ben.
Right.
And then after he seemingly was Nifta, he was Chazar V'Chavkai.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chavakuk means Chibuk Achar Chibuk.
Correct.
And this child who was born from this miraculous event, what does he say? Tzadik b'menasa yichyeh. So, do you give a shir? Is it Shabbos morning before davening? Like, how do you, if there are rabbanim listening to this, how would they practically implement what you say? What did you do it Friday night? Like, what's the
practically what I did from the first Shabbos? Well, there are a few things. As far as the limud is concerned, from the first Shabbos, I established that we would have for an hour before mincha that there would be I would give a shmuz. And it wasn't a shmuz just on the parsha to how do we figure out how Pasuk Tesvav and Tzayin work out and to say some pilpul. We do some of that at different times. But the Shabbos shir was shiurim and hashkofe and machshove and pnimius an hour. This way, the husbands and wives were able to come together. I know it's harder in areas where you don't have an erev, but here, Baruch Hashem, it was easier for people to get out. And there'd be every single Shabbos an hour shir. From, I would say by the third Shabbos, we would have an average of 250, 300 people coming to that shir. And this way, the husbands and the wives are hearing and ingesting and digesting the same Torah, which they can then discuss. It's not just a vart to say in a drasha, but shir. And the shir were always shirim that were addressing the basics, the yisaidus of Amuna and Pnimius HaTaira and discussions with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that generated an energy, a very healthy energy, a positive energy, as far as having a kesher with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that we started at the beginning. This is besides the fact that the first Friday night, I remember the first Friday night, we were renting space from a private school in the area. And Friday night after davening, I grabbed the guy next to me, and we did a rikud. And the people first looked at me like I was some mamish from outer space. And by the third week, the place was so crowded with cherva dancing that there was no room. People were standing outside, and people realized that it's not a matter of davke, that this was something that, that Rav Shlomo Kalibach was mechadish, such a thing that there could be joy in davening, there could be nigun, there could be excitement. This is our Messiah, this is the Messiah of Am Yisrael, and we have to reclaim that. So between a davening where there's more rikud and there's a lot of nigunim, and limudim to the entire olam, So over a relatively short time, there was a tremendous amount of excitement. And this is followed up then during the week. We would have shiurim on Sunday and on Monday night, and then Tuesday night, and a special shiurim for the women who can't make it, and so on Shabbos. And my wife gives a regular Tuesday morning shiur also. We coordinate the inyanim that we're talking about, and she has a group of 30 to 50 women that she learns also inyanim of pnimius with the women.
So would you feel that most shuls, there's a daf yomi, there are, shalachas and b'iyun, etc. Do you think that they were somewhat negligent or somewhat, we don't focus enough on shiurim, on amuna or pnimiyah satira?
Look, to speak honestly about this, I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know who I'm addressing. It's a little bit uncomfortable because the tzaddikim say that the ikur is not to complain about darkness, but to be maisif or to increase light. Of course, it's true that there are many, many fine talmidei chachamim who are much greater in learning than me, that they are unfamiliar with the limudim of pnimius, and that's not how they were raised in yeshiva. And it's natural for a person, when he comes to a shul, it's natural for that person to focus on what he's comfortable with. So a person who spent his entire upbringing in the sugyas of Shas and Poskim, that's the territory that he's comfortable in. He does not have as anywhere near as a familiarity when it comes to not just the chassidus, which is not learned in the yeshivas, with the exception of some chassidish yeshivas, but even when it comes to understanding Ramchal, Derech Hashem, learning Nefesh HaChaim in a deeper way, learning Mechtam Eliyahu, learning the Gra and Mishlei, and so on. That it's only natural that these wonderful rabbanim, these Talmidei Chachamim, would use their talents and skills and share those skills that they have with the Olam in Shul. They're not really, many of them are not particularly learned in these areas of Pnimius. and therefore they're uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable with the language of Emuna that we were talking about before. They're not familiar with it. It's a second language. I can't tell you over the years that I've spoken. Hundreds of Rabbonim have called me over the years, asking to their credit, how do we begin?
Tongue in cheek, you're saying Es Hashem Aleichecha Tira LeRabbis Tamei Chachamim.
LeRabbis Tamei, correct. LeRabbis Tamei Chachamim means those who are prepared to acknowledge that there's a problem that needs to be addressed. LeMashal, there's a very fine Rav from a neighborhood that's filled with Bati Midrashim and Yeshivas, and he was complaining to me that his shul, the numbers of his shul are dwindling, and a significant part of the population, especially the younger people, they're going to daven in Kalbach, in some Kalbach, meaning a couple of blocks away. And there are hundreds of people davening. So I asked him, I said to him, instead of complaining, try to understand, it's not the issue, you don't have to make a Kalbach shul, I'm not a Kalbach guy either. That's not the point. The point is that people are looking for something. So instead of giving your usual Friday night in the winter 15-minute drusha, which I'm telling you the truth, I went for a Shabbat Brachos in a from neighborhood for one of my nieces, and Shabbat Brachos, and the Rav got up before Kabbalah Shabbos, and he spoke 15 minutes about the subject of tivoling, whether you have to tivol aluminum, disposable aluminum trays. Do you have to tivol them or do you not have to tivol them? So don't get me wrong, I've given a share on that also in the shul, but not before Hadaydi. The people are coming, they're survivors of a week in the city, they're battered by all kinds of tumor wherever they go, the men and the women, and especially the men in their offices. And then you bring them into shul, the chalashing for a little bit, divalei kiyum chayim, lift us up, pick us up, show us that we're still Jews, that the Rebbeinu Shlom believes in us, that the Rebbeinu Shlom loves us. And instead he gets up and he starts to talk about aluminum pans. And to this Rav's credit, he wanted to know, what's wrong? What could I do? So I said, listen, I'm going to tell you. There's a time to talk about aluminum pans. It's the wrong time before the Chadayit. You've got to do that at a different time. You've got to have a sensitivity and understanding of what the people are missing, of what they want. And if you want to know why there are hundreds of them trying to pack into some Kaladach meeting, it's because they're trying to tell you something. Now, if you don't know how to do that, then they're going to look for it someplace else. If you want to learn how to do it, well, you could start, but a lot of 55, 60-year-old Rabbanim, they're not prepared to start to do that. They don't know how to do that, and this is causing a major, major disconnect in a lot of the kehillos all over the world, not just here.
So if I'm a 55 or a 60-year-old Rav, and I'm listening to this program, and I'm well aware that the spiritual devastation that modern life does to us, for those who work in any big city or maybe even in any small city, give us three pointers. You say, dear Rav, this is what I would do. Give us one, two, and three.
Dear Heiliger Rav, whoever you are and wherever you are, I would say first, anivus, the humility to admit that something has changed over the past 35, 40 years. There are different kufis. The Gra talks about this in Evan Schleimer, in the ninth parak. Hashem's Baruch has manhig the world with different midas and different spheres and different kufis of time. That what spoke to you 35, 40 years ago is not necessarily speaking to the people who are sitting in your Beis Medrash. So, Aleph, acknowledge that. Be humble and recognize that changes have taken place and you have to try to adjust your way of thinking, your way of learning, and your way of teaching. Beis, make use of the koach of Negina, of holy Negina. I'm not talking about the kind of so-called Jewish music that they're blasting at Chasnas, which is not Jewish at all, and there's no shaykh to Kedusha. Access music of Kedusha. When we started this in the shul years ago, bringing different menagnim who know how to sing the Gunim of Kedusha, so there were places all over that were making fun of this. Now they're all imitating it, and they're all trying to get these people to come and to have Kabbalah Shabbos and so on. So make use of the koach.
Could you mention, like, for example, like what type of menagnim you like?
I can mention, but it's not if I mention names, it's not to the exclusion of people that
yes,
I'm forgetting.
Yes, not to the exclusion.
Right. So from years ago, we here in the shul, we were the first ones that brought Chaim David to come to America. Later on, Shlomo Katz. We started with Shlomo Katz. and his brother, Eitan. Every single year we fly in Yosef Karduna. We have a Hilula for the B.S.S. and the Yard site, and there are over 1,000 Chevra that come to that, and we sing together with Yosef Karduna, who brings the violinist with him, an amazing guy, Gadi Pugach, Shemeret Yisrael. And there are many others over the years that we've had. Negina is an unbelievable tool, and the Olam wants that, and it could be used in the way of Kedusha. And Baruch Hashem, that's been a very major thing in the shul. And the third nakuda, since you asked for 3 points, is that I think that all of these wonderful rabbanim know this anyway, and I'm just to be mechazik the inyan, is that it's absolutely essential to strengthen personal sharm with the olam. That's not particularly esh kodesh or anything. That's just the beginning. You know, when the Satmarov came to America, so he had a few people that came to him. They wanted to have a shiur. It's hard to believe that there were only a few people that came in the beginning, but these were shiur saplate, the Jews who lost everything. They came to the Satmarov, and they asked for Gemara shiur, and the Satmarov agreed. You know, he was a Goyen Olam, and he was happy to give a shiur. And whatever Masechta, let's say, above Messiah, they sat down with him, the Rebbe came, it was less than a minion that sat down with him for that first shiur. And the Satmar Rebbe, Schussi Elenu, he began to ask, no, Chaim Yankel, how did it go with that business you were looking into? Did the taki get off the ground? And then he looks at the other one, he says, Berish, did what happened? Did you find your sister you were looking for? You heard about? And he's talking to the people, and the whole thing was like an hour of schmoozing, and then a little bit he read the Mishnah. Next time it happened again, he's talking schmoozing. So finally, one of the chabura came to the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, you know, we want to have a Gemara shiur. This is we're schmoozing. So the Satmarov, I saw this in the Sefer, that the Satmarov said, you know, every Gemara starts with Dav Beis. It starts with Dav Beis. And we're going to get to Dav Beis. But Daf Aleph, I want you to know what Daf Aleph is. I'm talking to people, each one of you has lost parents, children, brothers and sisters, Sebrach, and I mentioned Sheiris Apleta. Daf Aleph is to make a kesher with people. Daf Aleph is to know that I care about you, that I love you, that I'm part of your life. Look, there are Rabbanim that have an intuitive chush for that, and there are others who are uncomfortable with that, and they prefer to stand facing Mizrach and screaming out, Ashrei Yeshrei V'Esecha, and Zo. And they don't know how to communicate with their people. Obviously, that's going to be a major chisaron when it comes to creating a tzibur that feels that they have common goals and common purpose.
Missing, though, you didn't mention the Sarim HaKadoshim. Would that be number four?
The Sarim HaKadoshim, because I thought we spoke about that before. There's no question that is looming over everything, that there needs to be an in-depth learning of Sfarim HaKadoshim. And again, I'm not saying Davka Chassidus. Obviously, I'm a Chassidus fellow, and I'm very, very much connected to that, and I believe that's in our time, that is the most effective way to do it. But I'm not Chas V'Chalila suggesting that somebody who never learned Chassidus, that he has to Davka start learning Chassidus. If it means learning Madregas Adam, so do with them the Vardik. Do with them the Ksavim of the Grah. There's a whole world of the Grah, the whole universe of the Grah that's found besides the Biurei HaGrah on Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole world of the Grah. Nefesh HaChaim, and Kedim used to learn Nefesh HaChaim. It's not Davka Chassidus. I want to make that clear. Although I do believe that Chassidus is the most effective way, because I believe that it's Irish HaMashiach. I'm not going to go into that right now. But nevertheless, there's no question that all of the Sfarim of Pnimius. Before I ever opened up a Chassidus Sefer, I spent 15 years learning Maharal. I learned all of the Sfarim of the Maharal Be'iyun. I learned all of the Sfarim of the Ramchal Be'iyun. Before I began teaching any of the Sfarim of HaKadoshim. So, Maharal. We had a Chabur in Maharal. We spent years learning Tiferes Yisrael. We learned the Sfarim of the Ramchal. People, you could talk to a guy that learned years in Yeshiva, just ask him, stop him on the street and say it, and ask him, what are the 13 Ikari Hamunah? What does it mean to be a ma'amin? I'm saying, talk to people who are shemim mitzvahs their whole lives who went to yeshiva. Ask them, what does it mean to be a ma'amin? What's a munah? Tell me the 13 ikarim. So it's not just a matter of inspiration, it's also a matter of education. When a Jew knows the 13 Ikarim, and he lives in that world of the 13 Ikarim, and he's an Ani Ma'amin Yid, and he works on his Emunah, then obviously that's going to make a difference in his davening, it's going to make a difference in his Avodah, it's going to make a difference in his learning as well. Who knows the 13 Ikarim? Who's learning the 13 Ikarim? Who's teaching the 13 Ikarim? I've done this. I've asked guys that learned in Kollel for 10 years, just tell me 6 out of the 13 Ikarim, 6 and a half out of the 13 Ikarim. They start to fumfering. They can't even say the Ikarim. So what's going to be? So how do you say Shema Yisrael if you don't know what it means, Shema Yisrael? What does it mean? Who's Hashem? What's Elokeinu? What does it mean, Echad? What does it mean, Echad? What does it mean, Vahavtas Hashem Lokecha? What does that mean, Vahavtas Hashem Lokecha? It's the Mitzvah Daraisa. What does it mean, Vahavtas Hashem Lokecha? No? So we have to learn these things.
Rabbi Sai, this is Rav Moshe Weinberger, one of the most successful Rabbanim in America today, who tells us that this Siddur says that really today there is Leit Tzoma Lamayim Kiyim L'Shmayez Dvar Hashem. It's just we have to be able to tune in and figure out how do we reach those who are Tzoma L'Dvar Hashem? How are we Megalit? Rabbi Weinberger, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for listening. Baruch HaBatzlah.
Yes, Rabbi David, how are you?
Okay, so let's start. Before we start, could you give me the name of the shul?
Oh, the name of the shul is Beis Medrash Or Chaim.
Beis Medrash?
Or Chaim.
Or Chaim, okay.
Are we on the air?
No, not yet. Now we're going on the air. We have a phone with us, Rav Aaron Lankry, who is the Rav of Beis Medrash Or Chaim in Muncie, which has taken Muncie by storm. They've gone in, I don't know, 2 or 3 years from 10 mispalim over the course of a year, I don't know, 1,000 people daven there off and on between the different davenings and Yom Narayim. Welcome, Rabbi Lankry.
Shalom Aleichem, Rav David. What an honor and a privilege to be on the radio and to share possibly some wonderful insights with the world.
So here's the question. Today's...
Before the question, Rav David.
Yeah.
Can I share with you a very short word?
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, in the Torah, there are many different parashias. One of the parashias, the parasha of Matan Torah, was allocated to a person by the name of Yisroi. It's very fascinating because he was an Eved Avodah Zarah. He was a Kohen Midyan. Not only was Matan Torah, the parasha of Aseret Dibros, given to Yisroi, but also he became the shver, the father-in-law, of the Noten HaTorah, of Moshe Rabbeinu. And to me, that's fascinating. Why? Because he was not part of the program. He was an outsider. And he got the biggest kavod. It's an amazing thing that he became the parsha of Nesin HaTorah and became the father-in-law of the Noten HaTorah. And I've looked into it in the past, and I found a very fascinating thing. Yisroi, being the Kohen Midyan, and as we know, he worshipped every idol there was in the world, and he kept on searching. And finally, Ma Shemua Shoma Uba V'chule, like Chazal says. So the definition and the ideology and who Yisroi really is a Mavakesh. He's a person that is constantly searching and is constantly looking for Emes. And that is the prerequisite for Kabbalah Satara. That is the prerequisite of having a son-in-law that is the Noten HaTorah. You have to be a real Mevakesh. David, I know you consciously and subconsciously for about 30 years. And I would like to say publicly, you are one of the biggest Mevakshim I've ever met. Every conversation we've had over the years, it starts off immediately with a kasho, it's a habamin, it's a shayla. What do you think? All of these I attribute to you, and therefore the bracha that was chal on Yisroi, that he should be part of the essential noisin atara, mekable atara, it should be chal upon you. Komal kenshim tifne, tase v'tatzliach, you should go vayter mechayel achar, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Now we can start.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. It's a great honor. So,
it's the truth.
Thank you. Thank you. Accept. So, okay. Let me ask you, Rabbi. I call him historically Chacham Aaron. Okay. So, getting our kids to shul. Oh my goodness, what a hassle! Adults going to shul. I mean, how many people come late to shul? How many people enjoy going to shul? I ask that. We have an olam of thousands of people. How many of you say, "Oh, it's time to go to shul on Shabbos. This is fantastic," right? And it should be something special. I mean, we have a chance to speak one on one, to commune with the Bayri Olam, the Kavi Yachol. It should be seen as something special, and people. Many people, I don't want to speak, many people struggle with the joy of going to shul. Somebody who's created a shul that so many people love to go to and use it as a way to reconnect, reveal some of the source, the secret to making the source.
Okay. So, David, you've given me a very loaded question, and I'm very prepared to answer the question. But it's going to come in different phases and different applications. And phase number one is Im Ein Gedim Ein Tiyoshim. When I first initiated in the shul and in the other shuls that I participated in the past, the first thing you got to do is focus on the kids, because the kids are the tomorrow. A shul that has 10,000 men in the age of 50, 60, 70, and they don't have one kid, it's destined for doom. It's not going to have a continuity. So the first thing you got to do is you got to focus on the needs of the kids. And that's why in my shul, I'm the candy man. Yeah, I love it when kids come over to me and they give me a high five and I give them their lollipop. Because in their minds, they're associating shul fun. And as long as we can project that to our kids and share with them that imagery, shul fun, they're going to come back for more. And it's going to transform their lives as, yeah, I'm an adult now. Okay, I don't really care for a lollipop, but I know shul is fun. Shul is good. I never allow people to shishka kids in shul. Let them make noise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the sound of kids in shul. Why? Because the sound of kids is the sound of continuity. The second you shushka the kids, no, take them outside, he's making noise. It's all right. We love the noise of children. That's the beginning of building. Because when you want to build in any form of construction, you want to build from the bottom up.
And who knew this better? It says, "May oivai techakmeni." Paroi said, right?
Yes.
He said, "You could go, but afes ataftas, you can't take the children with you." He knew that the future is the children.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so that's number one, Reb Aaron.
Number one is you got to focus on the kids. And in our Kehillah, we have multiple programs that is focused on kids. We have a beautiful lady. Her name is Dina Lehr. She does a fantastic job with the children, focusing on the younger kids. Then
Do you have a play group, actually? You have a woman in charge of a play group during the davening.
I wouldn't call it a play group, because they're actually davening. She's doing with them brachas and modafening.
Uh-huh. And but somebody, a woman whose job is to just spend time with the children, which is unusual.
Yeah, and she gives them a lot of love, and she gives them candy. I mean, within reason, because some parents, when it comes to candies, you got to be careful today. Some parents are like very, don't give them, my kid's going to jump off the ceiling if he has too much sugar. Whatever. And some kids, you got to be careful about nuts and stuff like that. All right? I mean nuts in not in the nuts. I mean as in physical peanuts. Some kids are allergic. Not in the sense of that some people are nuts. And so we have Dina Lehr. She does a fantastic job. I don't know from, she came from some place out of town. And our focus is to take out of town, in town, a certain unity. Then, as the kids grow older, we have Yossi Fried with Rabbi Koren, where you have the teenagers. It's their minion. They're the gabbai. They're the chazan. They're the bakaira. They give the drasha. They give the dvar Torah. They set up the kiddush. they have a place. They have a place. This is me. This is mine. I have a Mechutan that comes from Toronto, and his grandchildren live on Parker, which is quite far from our shul, but they want to daven over there, and they schlep the Zayde and the father to shul. Now it's very, very interesting, because when a kid loves shul, it's not really comfortable for the parents in a certain respect, because when a kid's excited for something, he wakes up early for it. And it's Shabbos morning, and parents want to, you know, sleep a little bit longer, as it's written in the Shulchan Aruch. But if the kids want to go to shul, kids are going to be knocking on them. Tati, Tati, is it time now? No, Tatele. Is it time now? Is it time now? I want to go. Can you imagine making a scenario where the kids are coming to the father's bed? Tati, wake up. I don't want to be late. I got to go. I got to go. There's an event going on. I can't miss it. We have an elaborate fathers and sons program. Motzei Shabbos. We have an entire teenage program, Yossi Fried, Rabbi Fried, and Rabbi Koren. Outstanding. Outstanding. Trips, events. Again, shul, kids, teenagers, fun. That's it. Define it. Fun. Geschmack.
Now, how do you make it enjoyable for the adults, too?
The adults is a whole different thing. The adults is a whole different thing. And that really brings us to my introduction to the community, and my initiation when I first came, was the first thing I let everybody know that this shul will be a non-judgmental environment. That was, in this shul, you, no one's going to judge you, no one's looking at you, no one's going to look down at you. You can be absolutely comfortable. And by creating a non-judgmental environment, people come and express themselves. I remember one day there was a new person that came to the shul. He was standing outside the shul with his long black coat. I don't know what they call it. It's a kapata. No, but it's more Hasidish. What do they call that thing?
A bekish, a rekel, a jipitza, yeah.
Yeah, one of those things. It was nice and shiny. Right, it even had some velvet on it. I'm sorry for my Hasidish ignorance, because I come from a different part of the world. And he had the fur hat, the shtramel, in his hand. And he's standing outside, and he's not walking in. And I said to him, "Why aren't you coming inside?" So he tells me, "I don't know. Should I come in with my shtramel on or off?" So I said to him, "No one cares inside if you're wearing a shtramel or not." He goes, "Taka, Azoy, no one cares?" Says, "Nobody cares." "Really?" Put the shtramel down, he walked in. He was a person that was ready to disassociate himself from Torah and Avodah and being part of a kehilo, because he was having inner conflicts of how he had to be noig, or some type of constrictions he had with in the Hasidic world, and he couldn't find his place.
I told you this story. I was once davening in a shul Yom Kippur. Talk about non-judgmental. And somebody walks in. This obviously somebody who doesn't come to shul very often. He looked a little lost. It was in Yom Kippur. He comes to shul, and he's holding the machsa this way, that way. He's looking. So somebody goes over to me, says, "You're not going to find what you're looking for in the machzah." The guy says, "What?" He says, "No birchas hamazin in the Yom Kippur machzah."
Evis.
Talk about non-judgmental, right?
Non-judgmental. David, I got to tell you, Maisa, I was a rav in South Florida, in Aventura, a very, very large shul. And through the course of a year, there were over 15,000 people that came through the shul. And one Shabbos afternoon, it's a very affluent shul, this Shabbos afternoon before Mincha, this one of the Balabatim come over to me, and he's like all bent out of shape. And he says to me, "Why did we spend $15 million on a building for a shul? And these kids from Israel, they come and rip jeans and T-shirts, and no respect for the Shabbat, no respect, wah, wah." And I'm looking at this guy, you know, his hair is perfectly gelled, you know, Armani, the best clothing on, and he has like a 9-inch fat cigar in his shirt pocket. And I'm looking to myself, and I'm saying, this guy is concerned about the sanctity of Shabbos. And he's kvetching about it. And I say to myself, yes, the classic rule in all rabbinics is don't answer the question, answer the person. This person has a need. So I looked to him and I said, whatever his name was, I said to him, would you like a hug? He says, I would love a hug. I give him a hug for about 10, 15 seconds. And he tells me, you know what, they're coming to show, it's all beautiful. Just, it's all good. It's like, it wasn't the issue.
That's a fantastic quote. Don't answer the question, answer the person.
Exactly, exactly. It's a classical lesson. I learned a very long time ago. There was a story, I don't know, maybe in fifth grade, about this king that had a son, and the son said to his father, Daddy, you're the king, you can bring me anything in the world, right? So he says, yeah, sure, what would you like? He says, I want the moon. The moon? How am I going to get you the moon? You're the king. If you can't get me the moon, the kid goes on a starvation diet. The kid's getting ill. Brings professors, doctors, everything. No one can talk the kid out of it. Finally, this guy shows up and says, I'm a clown. Let me talk to your kid. He says, my kid's deathly ill. What are you going to do? He says, let me talk to your kid. So he goes in, he talks to him. But the king warns him, if you mess up, I'll kill you. He says, don't worry about it. I'm good. Let me take care of your kid. He goes into the room. The kid's lying in bed. He's staring at the moon. And he says to him, I'm here to get you the moon. He goes, great. He says, tell me, how big is the moon? Asks the kid. The kid says, it's about the size of my thumb. Oh, okay, good. I'm going to climb out the window now. All right, he climbs out the window, closes the shade. And he takes a little piece of paper, cuts out a small little white moon, and comes in through the front of the door. And he says, here, I brought it for you. And the kid was so happy, and he ate and came back. People need to answer the individual and not answer the question. And that's a very, very successful aspect of the rabbinate. The way I envision myself amongst maybe different than other rabbis, is that I'm a rabbinical concierge. I have a post, I have a position, people have spiritual challenges. I'm here to service them, to help them on their travels to wherever they need to get to, in the most subtle and the most simplistic and the most comfortable way to reach their objectives spiritually. That's my job. You go to a hotel, concierge, you go them, how do I go to that restaurant, what's the best, what's the this, and they tell you everything. And
so, Rabaron, so you're saying non-judgmental for the adults is number one.
Key. Non-judgmental. Also defining yourself. I'm saying for this generation, I'm not saying for all communities. I would never sit in the front of a shul. And the reason behind that is because I found it in life that it's easier to push than to pull. When you sit in the front, you got to pull people, and then you become the target of who does he think he is? Like, so hush. I don't even put myself in that predicament. I'm not the target here. I'm not the person. I'm here to help. I'm here to make things easier and to give people love and guidance. That's it. To push, that means when you're with them and we're working together to carry the load, it's just easier. It's just easier.
By the way, for the sake of the Olam, tell us, let's say you were just now in Eretz Yisrael. You went with your some of your Mespalim to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Narayim. What type of an Olam did you get there?
There's a unique niche of Am Yisrael that's being developed and is unchartered. There's so many people that are part of a misgeret, but they don't exactly fit into that association. But they have an appreciation. Let's call it Hasidish or Litvish or Sephardic. But the world today is smaller due to technology, and really because people are living closer together in Israel, and societies are intermingling, and people are marrying amongst each other, not just into one stereotype, but people are finding that there's beauty in everything. People, you know, certain things that might have been shunned in the past, today they're discovering that it has purity in it and it's beautiful. And just because I was born a certain way doesn't mean I have to be that person. It means to say I may have a preference, I may have an idea, but I want to explore for myself. So there's a whole niche of individuals that are turning into a massive kahal of people that may have been brought up one way, but they've had experiences through the course of life that show them that, you know what, that type of avoda talks to me. An avoda of simcha talks to me more than an avoda of depression. That's what it works.
So what happened when you nourished Yisrael? Just share with us as far as the popularity.
We started, it was a magnificent, we went there to Yisrael for Yom Kippur. We had over 600 people in a place called Heichal Shlomo. That's on, I only know the old hotel. It was called the Plaza. I don't know what it's called today. I only know it from Girs of the Yankas. Heichal Shlomo is next to the Great Synagogue. And the diversity of people that were there, it was just outstanding. It was very similar to our Kehila, but from Sephardim, Temani, Litvishin, the whole thing, every type of person was there and every different type of dress, and it was just perfect harmony. And it was unique because after davening, usually people after shine davening, okay, it's over, let's go home. We walked into the street, we made a massive circle, and instantaneously there was a tremendous amount of song and achdus that from all the other shuls that were pouring out, it just maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people just gathered around and joined. Just joined into the music, and it was a moment of a moments in life that just touch a person, that say, wow, there's really achdus b'am Yisrael. We need to find a way, we found ways to evoke it and to channel it, but it's there. It's there. Sincere love between just random people meeting together on a street corner and singing different songs, Kalbachi and classic Jewish music, etc. And it was nice. It was not nice. It was outstanding.
So we have non-judgmental. The Rav doesn't sit in the front. Give us, you started touching on the next one. What would be the next one?
Rabbinical concierge.
Okay.
The perception of the rabbinate. And now, here's the clincher. The clincher is that if you walked into a smorgasbord and you really love chopped liver, and the only thing they had was just chopped liver, it wouldn't satisfy you. People want diversity. People want to taste different things, and the same way they want diversity in Gashmias, they want it in Ruchnias. People want, now, not one person is able to do everything. You can't. Some people are more skilled in halacha. Some people are more skilled in chassidus. Some people are more skilled. Some people have a gift of speech, and some people have less. Some people have musical. In our kehila, Baruch Hashem, we have a coordination of a tremendous amount of rabbanim that are super talented in their own way, in their own respect. That people come in, they hear this, and then they go for that one. People came to hear my drasha, and they go to Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson's drasha, and then they go pick up their kids from Rabbi Koren that he just gave. There's diversity and there's opportunities to satisfy the spiritual palate with many different flavors. And usually Rabbanim are very defensive in their, no, it's under my control, I have to see what it is, you know what, let me see what you're going to say and I'll see if it's zugepasst for my kehila. And you got to let go. If it's no good, the kahal will determine that it's no good. And if it's good, they'll let you know it's good. And you have to let people explore and people have to have options. In the winter now, we have a Kiruv of Kerevim initiative where Friday nights, like tonight, is going to be Rabbi Jonathan Rieti. He's a fabulous individual. His charisma is outstanding. He's just a delicious person. And he gives a beautiful talk, and he gives chizik. And it's just part of the diversity. And people will come from all over Muncie to hear him. And there's a whole list of these individuals of fantastic rabbanim that will come to the Kehila, and they will share their insights, and they'll share their opportunity, and people are going to yearn from it, and they're going to enjoy it.
So the next item would be diversity, an opportunity for everybody to find the chelik aleikami mal that was given to them. So it's for their own particular relationship with the Rabbi Nishayel. That would be the next one.
The next one. And the next one
okay.
is the next one, and this is really a clincher. Kehilas, and I'll back this up. Kehilas are built from this negative word called schnarrers. I don't find them schnarrers. They're shlichi derabbanan. Right, I know people get abused, they get harassed, and it's challenging. But there's a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent them to America, and each one of them has an insight, and they will touch people's lives, right? And they will ingratiate. Of course, there has to be. We got to figure out the fakers. But even if you don't figure out the fakers, so you lost a dollar. Big deal. It's not the end of the world.
You think it's important to let them into shul?
Important. If you don't let them into shul, what you're actually doing is you're creating a siddur. And it's important to let them. I had two, three other rabbanim. They came, and they just joined into a kumzitz. They were so warm and welcoming. The kumzitz went on for hours. Just two nights ago, random. Oh, you didn't know he had that skill. He did this, and then he said a Torah, and this guy did that, and it just evolves. It's part of the diversity. And the expression of flavor. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I remember, I heard a mice, I don't know, I wasn't there. I heard back in the day, one of the wealthiest Jews offered Rav Shach $100 million. And it's a story that's told. I can't verify it. And I can't even verify Rav Shach's response. And he said, tell the Rosh Yeshivas they can stay back in America for the next couple of years. I got it covered. I heard the story with Reichman. And Rav Shach returned the check. I'll be honest, it's not something I would have done. I would never return the check, right? He returned the check, and he says, no, I want the Rabbanim to go out to Chutz Laretz and to ingratiate the lives of people in America. If it was up to me, I would love to have a Hachnasas Archim from Shulachim. They should be Masudar, a house. They can come, they have a meal, they Masudar. Menschlich. My personal house in South Florida, I used to host about 7 to 10.
Why did Rav Shach want that? I didn't follow. He wanted the people in America to see them, you're saying?
He wanted the people in America to see Rabbanim from Eretz Yisrael, see Rosh Yeshivas, because they go there. What are they going to do? They're going to give chizik. They're going to build relationships. And that's going to give continuity in America.
Hmm.
So that was
interesting.
I wouldn't have returned the money. I'm not good like that. I'm not Rav Shach. I'm not good like that. But this is basically the formula that we've been ingratiating in.
So you say it's the children, programs for the children, programs for the teenagers, for the adults, non-judgmentalism. The Rav should not be quote-unquote, should not sit in front, but he should be b'tech ami anechi yeshavis, that the people feel a relationship, that he's their concierge rather than an autocrat.
Yeah.
And diversity and...
Never look down. Everyone's good. Everything's beautiful. These are good people. Right?
And diversity of many different... Now, what would you respond? You know, many rabbanim, you know, when you were here in Muncie, when you brought Rabbi Jacobson in to be a speaker, people were scratching their heads and they said, you know, Rabbi Jacobson is one of the, you know, great speakers in the world today. And it's sort of like, how does a Rav allow somebody like Rabbi Jacobson to come in into the shul and give drushes? It was really quite amazing. And what would you, I'm asking you on the air, Aaron.
It's beautiful. It happens to be. I'm a very big fan of Rabbi Jacobson. Myself, right? I'm a big fan of everyone. Rav Nachum Shiner, Rav Daniel Korind, Rabbi Zilber. We have a Reish Kotel Rabbi Zilber that delivers. He started a kotel that trains the Hasidic younger light, gives them honor, dignity, and they learn IT. And we have over 40, 50 younger light that got jobs just going through the process. They learned our Chaim. So I'm very proud of all of the success of our Kehillah. Rabbi Jacobson, I personally love Rabbi Jacobson. He's an outstanding Yid. He's Zis. It's a good thing I'm not Chabad, because if I would be Chabad, I'd probably say he's a fantastic Beinoni. Right, for those of you that
But it's amazing that as a Rav you didn't feel threatened. That's what I'm astonished at.
It's because you have to have the end goal. Yes, he could outshine me. I'm very happy if he outshines me. You know why? Because it's not about me. It's about how many Yidden are going to be Makurov, how many Yidden are going to get the diversity, the flavors that they need so they can come closer to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the day that I'm insulted or I'm affected or I'm insecure about any person that's partaking, that's the day that I've lost my mission statement. That's the day that I've lost sight of the goal. And that's it.
Rabbi Sai, that's Reb Aaron Lankry. He runs the most successful shul in Muncie, New York, an year of Am Yisrael with hundreds of thousands of people. And listening to him today, I think we have a very good understanding of why. Thank you very much for joining us, Reb Aaron.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. We have on the phone with us from Lakewood, New Jersey, Rabbi Shlomo Per, who's the Rav of Bardichev. Welcome, Rabbi Per.
Thank you, Rav David, for inviting me to this online, on radio discussion. And it's a great honor for me to be able to share with you a little bit of what I feel about our little shul in Lakewood, Bardichev.
Okay, can you share with us what makes your shul different?
Okay, well, for one, every shul is different. Every shul is unique. Every shul has its own personality, its own character, the way it should be. And people are attracted to a shul based on the character of the shul, based on the kind of personality that's developed. And our shul also has its own unique and its own individual way. But I don't see it as different per se, meaning to say any different than any other shul is meant to be different. Every shul is meant to be unique, and every shul is meant to reach its people, and our shul in that way is not any different. It reaches its people, it reaches the people that like to come to us. And so in that way, I feel that we're a shul like shuls were always were all the years that we didn't have shuls. But in particular, if you have to ask what makes Bardichev Miuchad, what makes Bardichev, what's the uniqueness of Bardichev? Well, for one, we try to create an avir of joy, an avir of simcha. Everyone that comes in, no matter where you're from, or what you look like, or how you're dressed, is very welcome. And that feeling is palpable. Anyone that comes in, they feel it right away. And we have a mix. We're in Lakewood. We have an unbelievable mix of people. We have Yingalite from Beth Medrash Gavoya. We have Bochum from Beis Medrash Gevoya. We have Malamdim that are teaching in Chadorim here in Lakewood. We have boys with ponytails that come into us. Of course, colored shirts, with hats, without hats, Strimlich. We have all kinds of people that come in, and everybody feels comfortable davening together. We sing a lot. It's Geschmack. And in that kind of way, maybe that's what's unique about us, because we purposely try to create a feeling of welcoming everyone because you came to shul. That makes you miuchad, that makes you as an individual special, because you came to daven and you came to be with us. So that's one thing that makes, you know, that's maybe unique in this way. Not to say at all, chas v'shalom, that other shuls are not welcoming. I've been davening all my life in other shuls. I'm only here now, maybe 8-9 months. I became a rav of the shul. And all my life I davened in other shuls, and wherever I was, it was always a good feeling, and always a feeling of inviting. But the character of a shul takes on the character of its mispalim. So let's just say, for example, you have a community of Yingalite living in a certain area in Lakewood. They're very Aris Yingalite the way they should be. They're Emes Ibn Eitur the way they should be, and they should not be any other way. This davening is going to have that heiliger aura of the Bnei Torah, of the Choshev Yingalite that it's going to have, and it's going to have that kind of flavor, and that's how it should be. And if you have, let's say, a shul of, let's say, more balabatim, where people, you know, all the whole jobs, and they support themselves properly, you know, and they pay their full tuitions, and they, you know, they live in nice houses and drive nice cars. So that shul has a certain feeling to it of, you know, the Shana mentioned, and that's how it should be. That's how they should feel, and that's their comfort zone. And but there are a lot of people, even among the people who are Bnei Torah and the Choshev Yingalite, and among the Shana Balabatim, who maybe want to experiment with a different flavor, another kind of a feel, and they'll come in by us. Doesn't mean they'll daven by us every Shabbos. They'll come one Shabbos, they won't come another. But they like the feeling that they have by us. And of course, we have the studies that are by us from the entire gamut of people that are here. But so all the shuls really are beautiful. All shuls are welcoming, and all shuls people feel comfortable in. 100%. My whole life I dominated in other shuls, and I was always comfortable in every shul I went to, and I felt that everybody else is comfortable. 100%. But this is kind of a shovel a hole nefesh to a place, where all kinds of people can walk in and feel a certain kind of comfort zone. And that's what makes us unique and makes us special.
Do you say any shiurim in the show?
I say shiurim, yes, I do say shiurim. In fact, till recently we had a kail there every day. At one point it was a full-time kail, then it was only an afternoon. And we had, throughout the week, people coming in, again, of the full spectrum of colors and shades to learn. Some would come in to learn Be'iyun with the Chavrusis from Beis Medrash Gevoya. You know, a pair of Bochum in winter when it's long and the Shiduchim aren't going. The Chavrusis Shaf would just come in, plunk themselves by us because they felt good. Whatever attracted them, but they felt that by us it's Geschmack to come. And they sat and they knocked their limud. They did their own thing, but they found a comfort zone by us. People come, you know, to prepare. Sometimes the mechanchim, they look over, they prepare the class for the next day. We have people that tutor other boys. They come by us. They sit. Maybe they're more comfortable here. Everyone comes here for a different reason. And we had this kail, and the kail was designed to be similar to the shul, where anyone could really come in and join the limud. It was that kind of a limud that we learned, that when anybody came in, said, come sit with us, come join us. And we'd have people that come in, that came in with their jeans and with their pink shirts, and they sat and they learned with us. They'd sit 5 minutes, 10 minutes, then they would leave. They couldn't sit more than that, but that was their Yiddishkeit for the day, or for the week, or for the month, or who knows for what. Maybe they didn't come Shabbos, but they popped in 5 minutes in the middle of the week to learn with us. And we have, you know, people that just come in even for a cup of coffee. And they felt comfortable coming into this shul. Every shul has coffee, but some, for some reason they came to get coffee by us, and they would sit with us. And that's how we always, and throughout the week we had people coming and going. Now, this last kufa, I took a little break in it. I'm going more into myself. I have to learn certain mikvahs, you know, now that I'm a, they call me Rav, so I'm supposed to know some mikvahs in Aloha. So even though I did go through them and I did learn them, but I have to be able to pull out the answer when I missed it. So I'm focusing more on these inyanim now. So I took a little break just in Sukkot now on this. There's still people coming and going. And I would like very much to come back and set it up again this way. But for now, I just took a little break. But we have a Sunday morning shiur, a breakfast, a davening with a breakfast with a shiur. And we have at night, Thursday night, we have Tehillim. We say the whole Sefer Tehillim every Thursday night, specifically for the shidduch crisis that's going on out there. And we make a special Misha Berech for all the Bochum and all the girls that need shidduchim. Make a long Misha Berech for them. When we add names, you know, people giving the names. And all kinds of people come to this Tehillim. It's very interesting. People that are b'chol not the type of people you'd think would come into Baditchev. Like real hardcore, you know, like Lakewood type of people come to say Tehillim Thursday night with us. And there's a very Heilige Ruach when we say Tehillim. We say the whole Sefer and it's Gishmak and we divide it up. And sometimes, after the Tehillim or before the Tehillim, Bochum come in and they didn't even know this Tehillim. They join us or they stay on and they forbring a little, they learn, whatever it is, you know, that they, there's definitely a good feeling, not just on Shabbos, but throughout the week, and it's, you know, it's a Gishmaka place, no question, a very Gishmaka kind of place.
Well, thank you very much, and this was very enlightening, and we wish you much Hatzlacha in Berditchev.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure.
By the way, Berditchev, are you an Einikel of the Berditchev? Like, how did they pick that name, or is it just Tzahavas Yisrael? Is there a particular story to that?
Well, I came after, was already Berditchev. I'm there like 8 months now. But the one who started the shul, that's Shui Bash, he's an Einikel of the Berditchev. But maybe he has other Heiligazedis besides Berditchev, but he particularly chose Berditchev because it really represents what this place is about.
Right.
The Havas Yisrael that the Baditchiva, the Limud Schos that the Baditchiva stood for.
Right. Well, thank you very much, and Hatzlacha Rabbah.
Okay, thank you, Rabbah.
Kol Tov, have a good day.